Darren.
Hey, Dave. How are you, mate?
I'm pretty good, mate. How are you?
We've covered this before. I'm just as well as I was 3 seconds before.
Perfect. Now, just tell me for a second about a little place that I like to call Browns Bay.
Well, you asking me this because I'm South African.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Well, Browns Bay is a place where a brewery exists, one that is bathed in sunshine and the glorious aroma of malts and hops.
I think it's called The Creek That Is Deep.
Deep Creek Brewery.
Deep Creek.
Fucking hell, you can talk shit.
Yeah, but we've been there recently, haven't we?
Yeah, and we spoke to Scott and Hamish from the brewery. And man, what a chat it was and what beers we tasted. It was delicious.
That sounds like a great podcast. Should we listen to it?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right, good. Bye.
Here we are, sunny Browns Bay. It seems only fitting that the South African should introduce this. We're sitting at the Deep Creek Brew Pub with Scott and Hamish. Welcome, guys.
Thank you, mate. Yeah. Welcome to you guys too.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks. I think, as I said earlier, you know, this is a place I've been meaning to come for a while, and it's great to finally be here. It's an amazing looking venue. Can you tell us something about it?
Was just over 6 years ago now. A couple of the guys, Jared and Paul, whose baby really Deep Creek is, they were just living around the corner, just off Deep Creek Road, brewing beer in the garage. And I met them at that time before this was built. I was running pubs and... they had the idea that they wanted to build a little brew pub right on the beach. They found this spot, and together we built this this beautiful spot that we see now. The whole concept of it was the guys had spent a lot of time overseas, places like Perth or in Denver, and being able to have the idea where you can see the brewing happening in front of you, and then having the beer that is being brewed poured into your glass at the same time, and sit amongst the tanks, have some good food, good atmosphere, and that was really the whole idea of the brew pub.
Totally. I mean, right now the sun is shining through the windows, glistening off tanks that we are surrounded by. I think you certainly nailed that vibe.
Yeah, and so that was really the only idea when we first started up. You know, just wanted to have this little brew pub where we brewed beer for the community and had a bit of fun.
When was that, sorry?
That was, we opened in 2011.
2011, so that would have been quite early, you would have thought, in the sort of craft beer sort of story of New Zealand.
Well, we thought it was, we were still almost late to the game.
Oh, really?
Even back then, but we were kind of on the crest of a wave, but our model was that of just brewing for our own pub.
Yeah.
And then... subsequently, a few years later, opening another couple of pubs and our production brewery in Silverdale. That was about 4 years ago now, I think.
Yeah, 4 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. So we really didn't push our beers into the market too much outside our own brew pubs.
Right.
Yeah, we bottled a little bit here and there, just as you do, but it was really just, keeping it in-house and... for the community.
So you've got three brew pubs, is that right?
Yeah, well, this was the original brew pub.
Yep.
Then we built the production brewery in Silverdale and opened up two other sites. So we don't brew at the other ones.
Yep.
But we do supply into them, yeah.
Righto. So it was this place, then Silverdale, then the other two to sell.
At the same time, yeah. So that was in Coast in Orewa and Cove on Waiheke Island.
Nice. Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
And how do you reckon Browns Bay in particular has taken to the beer? I mean, you've been here a while. It's obviously been good.
Yeah, well, it was fun at the start. When we first opened the doors, the amount of people who would come in and ask for, you know, a well-known green bottle sort of beers and get quite irate when you didn't have it. And it took a while to sort of change mentalities. But we had to be pretty hardline about it and say, look, sorry, down the road you can get whatever you want, but we brew our own here.
Yeah.
And this is a big part of who we are, so try this one instead.
Nice, nice. I mean, it filled me with sadness, and I'll explain why. I used to work here about 10 years ago in just up the road, and every Friday lunch we'd head to the Speaker's Corner.
Oh, nice.
Because it was that or the local TAB.
Or the Brownsie.
We would go occasionally, but Brownsie was a little more rough.
Teddy Thursday.
Exactly.
Was that you, Darren?
No, I would never get my tits out.
Oh, really?
I would only get that out
of
the
Speaker's
Corner.
Is that just a recent thing then, is it? Or,
totally. Okay. Just give me a moment, I'll get them out. So, okay, I know you
He's only him. Half a beer deep.
So when I heard that there was a craft beer pub opening in Browns Bay, I was like, Jesus, what the fuck? That's awesome.
Yeah.
And why now? And why not like 4 years ago? Damn it.
People said we were crazy when we opened here, though. They were like, this is, retirement village central. Why are you opening here? You know, so.
Yeah.
It
works.
It worked. Yeah. And we've got a great spot right by the beach. Beautiful garden bar at the back, you know.
Yeah. Nice.
So talk to us a bit about sort of like your sort of entry point into craft beer. So Hamish, you're the brewer, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And Scott, you work?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint my role. Sales and marketing mainly.
Right.
But I got my finger in a lot of the pies.
So talk to us about Hamish, perhaps how you sort of like got into craft. What was your first craft beer? Let's start there.
Oh, probably my gateway beer would be Epic Pale Ale.
Right,
I think.
It's amazing how often that comes out.
So I used to work in Ellerslie.
I think it's
Penrose,
it's,
and went to Cock and Bull.
Yeah,
and I liked all the Cock and Bull beers, but the Epic Pale Ale was a standout. Just was so different, so hoppy compared to pretty much anything on the market at the time. Mm. So that kind of converted me. And I'd been dabbling in home brewing at the time, and I was a scientist before I was a brewer.
Right.
And so very interested in process and how things are made. And so I think I pretty much jumped straight into all grain brewing and I thought originally, how do I make the best pilsners that are out there, and then Epic Pale Ale came along and was like, all right, hops, how do I
fuck the pilsner?
Pretty much. I think I made one pilsner and was like, it's a waste of time.
Cool. Well, I mean, because I think Epic Pale Ale was both of our gateway
drug. Luke's got a lot to answer for.
Yourself, Scott, what was your sort of
My gateway one? Well, like Hamish, I used to go to the Cock and Bulls a bit, but I think the one that really switched me was Little Creatures Pale Ale.
Right.
So that was the one where I first sort of sat up and took a bit more notice of what there was out there.
Yeah.
And,
So you got a background in working in bars? Or?
Yeah, so I've run pubs for 20 years, basically.
Right.
In and around Auckland Central, Ponsonby mainly. I met the guys just through a mutual friend ended up just sort of collaborating with them on this place, and that was six and a half years ago I met them now. So
wow.
So this is almost your baby, I would imagine.
Very much so. I even painted the mural on the wall, and I designed the bar, and was in here till 3 in the morning still building it, with the guys. So and same with all the other pubs. We all get stuck in, and it's a big part of the business is that we make them ourselves. And
So pub wise so you've got 3, are there plans for more? Do you reckon the brew pub thing is the way to go? Any expansion to let's just backtrack. Browns Bay, weird place for a brew pub.
Yep.
Waiheke seems a little obvious. Orewa, maybe not as weird as Browns Bay. Any other, are you going to hit rural? You're going to go other parts of the country? Any thoughts about that?
Well, we've kind of put a hold on building new brew pubs at the moment.
Okay.
We really want to focus on being a brewery.
Right.
First and foremost. And that has been for about the past couple of years, and Hamish and his team have been brewing some outstanding beers, and the beer's just been getting better and better and better. We took out Champion Small International Brewery at the AOBAs in Australia earlier this year.
We noted that. We were very impressed. We went out and immediately bought all your beers and tried them and then figured out why.
Yeah. Good work.
So I think it's quite a hot topic at the moment, even talking about Luke. He had mentioned that in an interview. He thought that was the future of the craft beer scene in New Zealand.
Brew pubs. Yeah.
So the fact that you can have your brand and pour your own taps, you know, not having to fight for taps and tap space because of the influx of so many breweries into the market. I think we're knocking on 200 now, something like that, eh?
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot.
Yeah, I think last
new count. One every week, I reckon.
Yeah. Probably it's funny. Each interview we do, someone who we're talking to will inevitably mention how many breweries there are, and each time
it gets bigger.
Yeah, totally. So that's a good barometer.
Yeah.
Beerometer.
Oh,
classic. Good dad
joke. I'll just see myself out.
Yeah. So we don't think we'll focus on building more brew pubs at the moment because we've already got our home.
Yep.
We want to focus on growing our brand as big as we can.
Okay.
And focusing on the quality of our beers for the moment. Not saying that that's going to change in the next year or so, but you never know.
You never know. Fair enough.
Yeah, as production ramps up, you want to keep quality under control, definitely. So don't want to expand too quickly and find out you're making shit beer and then it all go tits up. So,
the story of the hard work, yeah.
That's right.
So, Hamish, you said you started out as a home brewer. Talk to us about that. Like, you clearly went all grain first, or
I think I did one kit and I was like, it's a bit shit. Then jumped in straight into all grain with I was a biologist, so I have a good knowledge of enzymes,
microbes,
all that stuff. So
wiggly things. I'm clearly not a scientist.
The whole process really caught on with me, and I mean, I was a massive fan of drinking beer before I was a home brewer. So it was it's natural evolution, and it kind of progressively took over my life. And I guess the story of how I started at Deep Creek is I'd met Paul and Jared through, we had a mutual friend before they'd started Deep Creek. And so they were home brewing. They came around to my place and we knocked out a couple of brews and we shared some beers. You try mine, I'll try yours kind of thing. And then at the time they said they were mad keen on setting up a brew bar, and they told us Browns Bay, and we're like, you guys are fucking mad. And then sure enough, it came to D-Day and everything was set up, and I think I came and helped out with a couple of brews before they opened, and came to opening day and thought, I'm really proud of you guys for doing this. There's probably a bit of room for improvement with your beer. But probably 2 years down the track, I decided not to be a scientist anymore. And at the same time, I was looking at starting my own thing, and I had a chat to Paul about potentially contract brewing some beer through Deep Creek. And at the, coincidentally, the same time they'd just let their brewer go and were looking for someone to take over the brewing. They're like, you can make your own beer by yourself on our kit and make our beer too. I was like, okay, sweet. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So, I jumped in on the Browns Bay kit, took that over for, it was down here maybe 6 months to a year at the same time as we were setting up the production facility up in Silverdale. And then, as soon as that was online, we pretty much shifted everything up there and, haven't looked back.
So you were brewing, when you say you were brewing for yourself,
I have my own like small brand, Isthmus Brewing, which I...
Okay.
Haven't really put any effort into it in the last probably 18 months.
I do remember seeing that about a bit.
Yeah. Life's been busy for me.
Fair enough.
Work-wise and personally. So, but looking to, restart that any month now. So once I find a spare hour or two.
Yeah, I'm guessing all of these awards are keeping you pretty busy.
Yeah, that's right.
Increasing manufacturing.
Yeah, I'm in charge of scheduling production. I can't even schedule my own bloody beer.
Anyone got more hours in the day?
Yeah. I find it hard to say no to people, and all these contractors come up and say, oh, can you make my beer, can you make my beer? And I just keep on pushing myself down the list.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
It's not so much the making, it's the selling that's the hard part. So
yeah, fair enough.
Small secret.
I mean, is contract brewing a part of the Deep Creek story, do you think? Like, because not obviously contracting your beer elsewhere, but because we've talked to a few people that I think have started at Deep Creek almost, or currently doing Deep Creek. I think Andrew Childs at
Behemoth.
We do some for Andrew. Yes, we're not his exclusive contract brewer.
He's up at 8 Wide as well. Yeah,
he's a bit of a hoe. He spread himself
out. He does get around.
But that's part of the, like, the, I suppose it's about keeping the brewery busy, I suppose, and making sure that you're utilising the...
Yeah, stainless costs a lot, and it costs a lot to stay empty if you can't fill it yourself during the lean months, which we're, I guess, just going through now. But come summertime, you're running everything at peak capacity, and probably your number of batches drops off for contractors as you're maximising that yourself. But, yeah, it definitely keeps you in business over the winter, so... Mm. Yeah.
So that's a lot of talking about other people's beers.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But you know, I'm currently drinking a very delicious Deep Creek beer. Do you want to talk us through the range, or maybe talk us through the evolution of the range? Because presumably in 2011 you started with something
different than what we've got now.
And now, because we've done a bit of research, because we're professionals,
also known as alcoholics.
Yes. and there's, like, I think the way you've sort of divvied up your range is quite interesting. But we'll let you tell the story rather.
Okay. Well, when we first opened up, we had. I guess I'll start actually now with what our current range is. We have four sort of sessionable beers. They're the ones that someone would, I guess, call gateway craft beer.
Right.
Our Undercurrent Pilsner, Lotus Pale Ale, Redwood American Pale Ale, and Leprechaun's Bell Irish Red Ale. And they're all around the 5% mark, so easy drinking.
These are continuous. This is your core.
Yeah, we don't like to use the word core because
right.
We actually think the core of our business has actually shifted somewhere else now.
Right.
So we have those, and then two of our flagship beers, which has been from the very start, was a Dusty Gringo India Brown Ale.
Yeah. So good.
Brown IPA, yeah. It's been there since the very beginning. And Pontoon and the Monsoon is our everyday IPA.
Yep.
So they jump up in alcohol a little bit more, so they're both around 6.8 to 6.9%. And then we nowadays we have three projects. So an IPA project called Lupulin Effect, a sour beer project called Steam Funk, and a dark beer project called Nero. And most recently we've actually just added one more hop oil project.
Oh.
Where we're using that. So... quite a large departure from when we first started, where I guess we did really just have a core range of beers, and that was all.
Right.
But then the major evolution for us, I think, is the project beers.
Yeah.
Because what it allows the guys to do is brew fun stuff all the time and new styles under those projects.
Totally. I think I love the idea of having, rather than having a number of beers that you make and make and make, have a number of ranges that you make beers under.
Yeah.
And so, it changes seasonally.
So the idea, we do like the idea of, you know, having lots of different beers. And we had started, Hamish and the guys had started coming up with other ideas and, hey, let's do this and do this and do this. And so we had a double IPA called Dominatrix, and we had this called Winter's Night or whatever. You know, we started getting this range of beers.
Don't forget Moose Knuckle, man. That was our best naming session ever.
Is that on tap somewhere? Can I have one of those?
That was our robust porter.
Robust porter.
Now it's boringly narrow, robust porter. Moose Knuckle was way better.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, that was I think one of the big things for us was the overhead. We always wanted to make lots of beers, new beers, try new stuff all the time. And every time you do a new beer, new label, new name, new packaging,
yeah,
all that, it stifles creativity. And by just blanketing everything under the ranges, allows us to try new stuff, fail, and it's
and move on.
No great cost.
Yeah.
So if we fail, it's no big deal. It's whatever, 2,000 litres, sell slowly, whatever.
The other flip side to it as well is getting into stores, say. There's only a limited amount of shelf space.
Yeah, right.
So we can say to the stores, hey, look, we've got these ranges. Just stock the range. Then once that one runs out, just pull in the next one. You don't need to go sideways. It's basically just a vertical rotation.
Nice. It's very smart. Very smart indeed. Now, I know I'm going to preempt Dave's next question because
you don't even know what my next question
is. We're like one.
Right, sure.
One big pile of... Never mind. Barrel aging, is that a thing? And are you... Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Yeah. So we've done.
You have a program.
A few barrel aging or barrel aged beers. The moment, I guess, we've done Dweller, which was a whiskey barrel aged Scotch ale. We've done
still one of my favorite beers ever.
Neptune.
On tap, is it?
That was
every Bevana. We're there, and someone comes up and asks for Dweller. Are you doing Dweller again?
That's him.
Yeah. We did Neptune, just another whiskey barrel aged.
That was a Russian Imperial Stout.
Yep. We're just obviously dabbling in sours with the Steamfunk range. But yeah, I've been a big fan of sour beer for probably the last 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're going to start making sours.
Proper
lambics.
Right, so you've got barrels just cooking away in the shed,
We've got empty barrels at the moment, so yeah.
Watch the space
in about 2 years.
Right. Excellent. I look forward to that, man. That sounds awesome.
That is awesome. You did preempt the question. That is one of my favourite styles of beers. I can't get enough of that stuff at the moment. But there was the other question I was going to ask, which was, so you mentioned earlier cleaning up some awards. Talk to us about that.
The Australian International Beer Awards. So one of the largest, I think it's second largest in the world, beer awards. And this year it actually had more entries for the first time than the Beer World Cup, I believe. So very briefly took out the top, the biggest in the world.
Excellent.
Award.
Boom.
We'll take that.
So what was the award? It was...
So we took out Champion Small International Brewery.
Right,
cheers to that, man.
Yeah, thank cheers. Well job, done. Guys. So competition entry experience is limited to getting
pond water.
Pond water, I think, was one of the descriptors. But to take out a champion brewery, that means you need to enter a lot of beers and they all need to be good, right? Yeah, like so you can't, if you have a shit one, you're out.
Yeah, so we entered 12 beers into the awards and we won 11 medals.
Wow. That's amazing.
Was that it? 12 or was it 11 beers?
Something like that. My recollection is pretty hazy.
We are known for our fact checking, so before this hits the ears,
you should check that.
It was either 12 and 11 or 11 beers entered and 10 medals or something like that.
Okay. Right. So that's pretty good, right? Yeah. You got to be pretty happy with that result.
It was
going into it. Yeah, I actually didn't have very high expectations at all. I was almost, I guess, had depressed that we'd sent over some what I thought wasn't our best work. Right. I woke up and I think we're doing a double brew that day, so 6 o'clock start, and then getting up and like, holy shit, my phone felt heavy with messages. So it's flashing really fast.
Myself, Paul and Johan were over in Melbourne for Gabs.
Right,
at the time, and the AIBAs are on then.
Right.
So we decided, we'll go along. We've got some beers in there, you never know.
Yep.
We might get a couple of medals. And they actually forgot to read out a few of our medals on the night. So during the night, we didn't even think we were in with a chance.
Australians.
And then it came to the big awards at the end, the champion breweries. And the first nomination was us, and we were like, excuse me? What the hell is going on? And then it was us, Kereru, from just down out of Wellington
there.
And a small American brewery. And yeah, we took it out, and I screamed ever so loudly and jumped out of my chair like, what the hell? And then I think I even said a few words. I couldn't tell you what they were. It was all a bit of a blur.
Fair enough.
That was just the start of it. Just unbelievable. We were a bit blown away. We always thought we made pretty good beers, but obviously other people do think so as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So right after that, you texted Hamish 700 times, made his phone heavy.
Him and Jared. And they were, Jared was over overseas. You know, these guys were back home working. And we decided to go out celebrating, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah. Fair enough. Gabs, I would have done the same in your shoes. The only thing I was happy that I was back in New Zealand was I wasn't going to have the hangover the next day.
Yeah, totally, man.
Yeah. But that must be amazing, right, to have that sort of affirmation of what you're doing and that you're doing a great job and being recognised.
Respect to your peers is probably the best accolade you can get. So, I was pretty happy with that, especially something that's blindly judged. You can't do any better, really. So
And I just need to reiterate, like a champion brewer, like there's no shit beer in there, right? They all have to be amazeballs.
It's on your top four beers.
Is it? So right. Don't ruin the story.
The story is we got 10 medals out of 11 beers entered. So
Right.
So yeah, I won't be too humble, but our beers were all really good.
Just did a roll. Awesome. That's really cool. And I think personally that made me step up and notice Deep Creek. I mean, I knew that you guys were around. I'd always intended to come out here.
I think it did for a lot of people. I've heard that in the trade quite a bit as well.
It's because I think I immediately went out and bought as many of your beers as I could. And I think that clearly there had been some effort on your guys' behalf to get your beers out into the market a little bit more.
Prior to that as well, we'd got 2 gold medals at the New World Awards.
Right.
And that had, increased our national exposure. So we had 2 beers on the shelves in every New World in the country. So we were already, starting to make a bit of a presence. And then this kind of followed on from it. And I guess we already had our toe in the door with that. And then
we also signed a national distributor.
Right.
So that was the first.
That's right.
Yeah, we didn't have any distribution before that.
Right.
So we signed with a company called Hancock's, and so with national distribution, that allowed us then to them to start pushing us into places where, it was just me selling beer before. So going from one guy to an entire team of people.
Well, now you can kick back a bit.
No, it actually got busier. it wasn't. Instead of you would have thought that, but no, you have to work harder, if anything.
So, I, with a bit of research, I discovered you've got a bit of a distribution. Well, you had, things may have changed, in Melbourne.
Yep.
And I'm guessing because of these recent awards, your Australia distribution is
bigger.
Bigger?
Yeah. So we were with a little one man band over there, and really just Melbourne only. He did ship a pallet here or there, maybe or half a pallet to, say, Perth or maybe South Australia. But after that, we had a few people knocking on the door.
Okay, awesome.
And made the hard call to leave Hemlock and go with a company called Experience It.
Right.
So we basically took over Tuatara's spot.
I see,
so
okay.
So he used to distribute Tuatara. When Tuatara sold, he lost distribution rights to that and was looking for the next big New Zealand brewery, basically, the up-and-coming big brewery that is to be put on the map. And he found us, tried our beers, loved them, and, that was it.
Fantastic.
So now I've sent him a couple of orders.
Yeah, they're also nationwide distribution. So rather than just Melbourne, they're Australia.
Cool.
Excellent.
So clearly, you mentioned before the plan was to go from brew pub to international distribution. So you've signed a New Zealand distributor. Now you're in loads more pubs because we see your beer. I mean, at my local quite a lot, and obviously enjoy it. And then, so plans for world domination as well, Australia and
absolutely,
yeah,
going to take over the world.
So, do you have is
What's the plans for USA, UK, et cetera, et cetera, Japan, the other people who like beer?
The rest of the world who likes beer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've got a team of people up at the brewery, and we're all looking at that. So
we're ready. Yeah, ready to go.
We've explored other markets. Gone over to China a few times, and different parts of Asia, whether it's Japan or Hong Kong or mainland China.
Okay.
We've looked at Brazil. I just sent some stuff to Sweden recently.
Hey.
Mm. One of our brewers is Swedish, so that helps.
Fair enough.
I guess our approach is we want to do things well, and we want them to be sustainable. So we don't want to just go and shotgun the world, see what sticks.
Right.
We want to do our research, hit a market, stay there, and do well. So that's why, I guess, why we're just Australia at the moment. We're not UK, Thailand, Brazil, America. We want to have a sustainable approach.
Fair enough.
It's quite a hard product to export, though, right? Depending
on
what
shipping
it is.
Water around the world, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't get any more expensive than that.
And it's also all our beer is unpasteurised.
Right.
So it's effectively you've got to treat it like milk.
Well,
It's
no one ships milk around the world, man. They make it into powder.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So now we're talking.
Powdered beer.
Just add water. Add it to your soda stream.
Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, you're a scientist. Hey, yeah. So that, you could revolutionize.
We'll get back to you on that. Yeah. So, I mean, we have to have cold chain the entire way.
It's logistical fuck up. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are people now realizing that that's got to happen for the good of most beer.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you're already sort of like one step advanced perhaps from most players in that you're in cans exclusively,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And that travels better is my understanding. Is that correct?
Think so.
Yeah.
So, Silverdale... where you brew, there's also a tap room. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. And how many taps there and how...
So it was, until recently, it was split between us and Zephyr Cider.
Oh, okay.
So Zephyr rented half the space off us.
Yep.
They've recently moved to Hawke's Bay, so now we've taken over the entire...
Okay.
They were Matakana, weren't
they? They were Matakana. That's where they started.
Right.
Moved down to Silverdale with us, and then when we first opened up, now they're down there, so we've taken over the entire space.
Oh, fantastic. Cool.
And so much more space in the brewery, and we've got the entire tap room for ourselves.
Sweet.
So I think we've got eight taps up there.
Six taps? Yeah.
I remember.
One
of them is dead and one of them is CO2. There you go. We've got eight taps, but only six of them pour beer. How about that?
Yeah. it's just off the main highway, at the top of the hill in Silverdale. Okay. Locals can come down and fill their own riggers straight from the brewery. So that's the whole idea of it.
Cool. So what is the plan for Deep Creek? 10 years down the track, like if you put your crystal ball out and think what's the future for Deep Creek? Like, you guys are clearly on a path at the moment. You've won awards. You've got an amazing brew pub. You're distributing locally and internationally. Starting, like, what's the future hold?
Continue in the same vein, really. I think our focus is always going to have to be making the best beer we can.
Yeah.
And controlling quality, no matter what, no matter how big we get. With so many players in the market, I think that is our number one focus. How can you stand out from everyone else? Make sure you make absolutely brilliant beer.
Yeah.
As far as brew pubs and stuff go, that is still on the cards, and we may have other ones around. We don't want to get too big that we're with those that we're taking away from the actual brewery part of it.
Yeah.
And then obviously exports and being able to get that out to the world. And yeah. So just basically continue what we're doing, but trying to focus on the base of what we do, which is brew beer.
Yeah. And good beer.
And great beer.
Is exactly the key to it. Yeah. And from what I've tasted, you know, obviously you guys are doing a good job of that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, cool. Darren, anything to add? Or
I have nothing to add. Maybe one final question, and it's more of like your opportunity to give brewers, entrepreneurs, lovers of beer, some words of wisdom.
Stop fucking starting breweries. I mean, that's like...
No, well, I guess if you are starting, have values and be true to them. Don't, don't race to the bottom. Don't try and make low-cost, low-ingredients beer. That market's well and truly covered. I like to see... I got in this for making the best beer I could.
Yeah.
I guess cost be damned to a certain degree. But I always want to make the best beer that I want to drink. That's, I guess, my philosophy as a brewer is make drinkable beer. Don't make the biggest. He says, having made the hoppiest beer, hoppy my hot face.
But incredibly drinkable.
Never lose sight of, you should be able to drink a whole pint of what you make. For us, like all our ranges, you see chili beers that you can have like a sip or something, and we made a chili beer that, and people tell us it's not hot enough, and we're like, but we want to be able to drink a whole pint of it because we'd like to drink our beer. So that, I guess that's my philosophy behind making beer. I want something that's drinkable, is not over the top or out of balance, unless it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I second that. I reckon this. Any advice is put your best foot forward, and then don't be afraid to admit that you. Everyone makes mistakes, and you can always learn and always grow and always do better. And so you don't think you've reached the top just because you're doing well. Just continue to push.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I mean, you guys make amazing beer. There's a testament in the glass of delicious apricot Gosa. The steampunk in front of me, but also in every other beer that I've ever had of yours. So thank you so much for your contribution to my beer drinking. Awesome.
Scott Hamish, thank you for having us at your pub. It's been fucking mint.
Well, much appreciated. Right. Thanks for coming along, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming all the way to Browns Bay.
I'm
South African. I'm home.